home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Well, hello, everybody. We're starting Monday morning off with Rated G Radio. I'm your host, Garrett Miller, and for the next hour, we've got a wild hour of exciting live radio programming for you. We're going to have author PJ Kalando. She's going to be joining us and talking about her brand new novel. I don't even think it's out yet. I think I got a preview copy of Hashes and Bashes. We'll be learning all about her writing style, her journey as a writer, why she's so cool and fun, her worldly travels, and so much more. And we'll be having PJ on in just a couple of moments. Here's a weird week for you because, you know, normally we'd have five shows a week. I'm going to tell you, this summer I've been breaking the rules. If I have had somebody who needs to postpone because of another event or whatever the case is, I've kind of taken the day off from the radio, and it's let me do so many other fun, creative things. I am kind of loving my abbreviated schedule for the summer. This week, we've only got three shows, so you're in one of the three hot zones right now with PJ today. We're taking tomorrow off. I'm going to do something fun, like finish my book. On Wednesday, we have psychic Sue Davey returning to the show from the UK. She's going to be phoning in or Skyping in or direct connecting in somehow. We had her back in February. She was very popular. And actually, I rebooked her back in May. It's taken until now for an open slot. So I'm very excited to have Sue back on the show. So Wednesday morning, if you'd like to ask a psychic type of question, the phone line's open at 7:45. And you can call in and get yourself in line, because what happens whenever I have psychics on the show, I get like 100 callers that want to ask a question. And of course, the show's only an hour long. So if you want to ask your question, you got to get your call in early. That's Wednesday. Thursday, we are not doing Rated LGBT Radio. You know why? It's because I get to go to a movie premiere up in Hollywood with my buddy Craig Campobasso, casting director, author, and filmmaker. He's got a new movie that he cast called Telios. It's going to be, I think, like, it's a science fiction film, and it's, I think it's kind of like blockbustery. So it's going to be a big darn deal. It's a cast and crew private screening, so it's not like a Hollywood premiere. But I get to go hang out with, you know, all the cool kids on Thursday night. So I told Rob, you can either do the show yourself, or we can run a best of, or just not do a show. I think he wants me to run a best of, but I may just like let it go, because you can go to the archives if you really wanted to have a best of, you know. And then Friday morning we have Tim Kaine, and Tim is a singer-songwriter out of Florida. I think he's out of Florida. That's where I've been talking to him, I think. He's got a band called Boys Entrance, and it's like a boys, you know, like if you think of like the 90s bands like NSYNC and 98 Degrees or 99 Degrees or 101 Degrees, whatever that band's name was, and, you know, all the popular boy bands. Boys Entrance was one of those bands that was kind of like bubbling right on the cusp of making it big. And they are still going strong today, all these years later. So we've got a new album from Tim's band, Boys Interest, on Friday called Tunnel Vision. That show starts at 8 a.m. Now get this, because, you know, 8 a.m. here. So when we're talking about doing the showtime, you'll think sometimes that the blonde is actually real here, folks. It is not. It's manufactured. And I get more on Wednesday from Larry at the Anaheim Hair Company. Thank you, Larry. But I set the time up with Tim. So we're talking last week, and he goes, yeah, that's like 11 my time, and or, you know, and I said, yeah, that's great. That's totally 11, you know. Anyhow, it's 5 a.m. his time, because it's 8, or it's 8, we thought it was 5 a.m. his time, 11 a.m. We got the times all totally screwed up. So we apparently are both natural blondes, because we can't figure out, and I do this every single week, and anyhow. We're doing the show at 8 a.m. on Friday, folks. That's 11 a.m. Eastern time. So Tim actually starts a new job that week. And I said, well, don't get yourself fired by doing the radio interview. We can do it later or earlier or do something like that. But he's going to call in at 11 a.m. Eastern and talk for 15, 20 minutes about what his band is doing with Tunnel Vision. And I've already got the music uploaded. It's ready to go. It's going to be super, super fun. So today, everybody, get ready, because One of my favorite authors, PJ Kalando, is joining the show. This is the first time she's been on the show. Hopefully, first of many times, she'll come back and promote all the fun stuff that she's on. I've met her through SCWA, Southern California Writers Association, with all the fun people there. We just had a great meeting on Saturday, which I'd love to talk about that as well. She's also active with Lit Up of Orange County. That's going on tomorrow night at Keen's Coffee in Tustin. If you would like to go and need more information and you don't have something to write with now, just send me a note later and I'll get you all the 411. But Keen's Coffee in Tustin on Tuesday night around 7 o'clock, and you're going to hear three authors do three separate readings from their books and then take questions from the audience. And then Maddie is going to interview them as well. And it's a fun time had by all. I will tell you, if you've been there before, you know you have to get there early because for a coffee shop that's huge, it is standing room only by 7 o'clock. So if you want to get there and hear these authors read their tales and share some insights, you got to get there before all the rest of the cool kids do. Otherwise, you're going to be standing outside trying to listen in. So that's that. PJ, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm well. And I just would like to tell the entire audience and you that I am a natural blonde.
You are, but, you know, I mean,
very
thankfully,
important, yes.
It is very important.
Yeah.
I wish I were a natural blonde. I was a natural blonde until I was about, like, 18, and then my hair turned ashy brown ick. So,
well, I have
that.
A success story. My hair was naturally redhead and started getting lighter when I went into my teenage years. And when I moved to California, the sun has naturally bleached it. And I have
wow.
to tell you that life is more fun as a blonde.
It totally
Way
is
better.
More fun. Yeah. Cause, you know,
I used to get teased, and now I'm a teaser.
Well, you know, the redheaded, I think for a long time, redheaded, you know, people, they got like a really bad rap. But now, you know, if you talk to anybody, they go, ooh, gingers are hot. Everybody loves the redhead.
They
rap.
Are. But, you know, that's a little out of phase for me.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah,
oh, well.
So how are you today? I mean, I'm so excited to have you on here. I've wanted to have you as a guest
Thank
for
you.
Ages and ages. And we've, you know, again, just like with everybody, I had to say, okay, when can we get you in the book? And it's been a million years. So we're here. We're live.
And so I started with I'm a blonde. And
yeah.
I live in Irvine with a fabulous husband. He and I are both retired. And I call writing my encore career.
What was your other career before you were retired and decided that you wanted to have fun for a change?
Well, I had fun in my job. I was a licensed speech language pathologist, a very, very rare beast these days. If anyone out there has a 20-something young person who hasn't yet decided a career path, let me put in my paid political plug for speech language pathology. It's sometimes called communication disorders, and that is a person with expertise to help people be able to communicate from a variety of disorders and disruptions in life, from autism to stuttering to cerebral palsy to neurological diseases to strokes. I mean, it's a very wide swath, and people think that talking is easy because we all do it, but it's the most complex thing that human beings do on a daily basis. So its repair is kind of difficult. And so it's 100% problem solving all the time with people. It's relationship based, and I adored my private practice. My husband thought I would never close it, but I have to say that writing was the bridge, and I closed my private practice without a whimper. It was extraordinary.
Wow.
It was fun.
So
yeah,
let me go
bye
back.
Bye.
So how did you, I mean, when you were going to school, you know, did you say, you know what, when I grow up, I'm going to be a speech pathologist and I'm going to help people with it? I mean, did you have other ideas, you know, growing up on what you wanted to do? And how did you fall into that as a career? Because that, I mean, it's very rewarding.
Well, I was really interested in ancient history, so I was going to be an archaeologist. Uh-huh. But then, you know, when you think about the reality, I don't like monotony and dirt and dust. So that wouldn't work. And then there's astronomer. But then you get a crook in your neck from looking through the long telescope. You know, just like, there's a downside. There's a huge downside. And they're apart from people. And I am enraptured by people. I just have to be with people. Like, I have a personality kind of like yours. So now that I know what I know, because my family was like others, things were often unspoken. Now that I know what I know, my brother, who's age eight at the time, and I would have been in high school, was finally diagnosed with a learning disability, and he was diagnosed by a speech pathologist at a local university. And now that I know what I know, I have a sister who's in the autism spectrum, and I coped with those. My grandmother and mother were in a charitable organization that funded speech and hearing clinics in the 50s because it was a rare, rarely funded thing, really acknowledged thing. You know, I know you don't remember, but until Dr. Spock, children were to be seen and not heard. So talking was irrelevant for a child. But as we moved away from that model and children had difficulty communicating, it became more acknowledged. And so anyway, and the cusp of the time when my brother and sister, it was known that they had difficulties, instead of being just a teacher, which most of my family members were, I became a speech pathologist. So I had my purpose from day one, and I felt very fortunate. Actually, all the other kids were partying, and they had no focus. I'm partying, and I had that great focus, but I also had a reason to study. And I've adored it. I adored my major. I loved what I did. I adored it. As I said, my husband was astonished that I closed my private practice. Just easy peasy, no problem. Hello?
So were you, in between all of these awesome people that you were helping, were you writing stories? Were you doing newsletters? Were you, how did you decide to?
My parents moved a distance from the nuclear family, which the core base of my dad's family and later of my husband's family that I married are farmers. The Midwest is full of small family farms. And so my dad was not a farmer. We went to the family nest, if you will, frequently. And there were no iPads then, and there were no TVs in the vans. We didn't even have a van. How we made those trips is remarkable without me killing the younger siblings. My mother would engage me by, the alphabet on license plates and billboards got old quickly. You found all the letters quickly. So she'd say, see the people in those cars? Where do you think they're going? And why are there only two of them? And she'd get me thinking, and we'd make short stories about people in the cars we were passing on the road. And that I absolutely know to be my my formative story writing. It's a talent I carry forward. Like if I'm at a stoplight, I begin a story about the people next to me. Yeah. So I have fabulous story starts, but then the people drive off and I don't have fabulous story endings. So, but that's exactly where that came from. Exactly.
I love that. Isn't that funny how parents, they, whether they know it or not, they're just like, oh my gosh, you just got to keep, PJ quiet in the car. What are we going to do? And little do they know,
well,
they're
engaged. Got to keep her engaged.
Yeah.
So
right.
Poke at that little one who poked at her first, but just oh,
right.
Family time.
But
funny.
Bless your parents, for bless your mom for doing that. Cause I'll tell you, that's really, it's interesting to hear where people's inspiration come from. And, years later, it's turned you into this great writer. So what was one of the first stories that you ever wrote? Do you remember?
I totally remember. In fact, it's a little movie in my mind. Because I was the oldest and there were two younger siblings that required a great deal of my mother's time, I became an early reader. As soon as I could read, I was gone, And my psychology friends tell me that I'm fortunate my mother allowed me to play. She didn't make me become the co-caregiver with those children. So I got to go into my own little world. And my very first fully formed memory of my mother is sitting on the kitchen table while she did dishes. I was doing homework to write a story. And we had a picture prompt that we had to write a story about, and my mother suggested a metaphor. And, of course, I didn't know what the heck that was. And I took it to school the next day, and the teacher went crazy. And we lived in a small farming community, so the school was small, and I became like the school, like, look at what this second grader wrote. Kind of, I mean, how can one not go forward after early break? I already got my Oscar in the second grade.
I love that. Oh, my gosh. So,
it was way fun.
So when you got ready to close up your practice, was that when you, I don't want to, and I'm so sorry to make it sound like this, but I've had my cup of coffee, so it just kind of comes out. Is that when you decided you wanted to be a writer, or did you kind of have a plan before then?
You know what? There was a notice in our community newsletter about a man who was starting a writing group in the neighborhood. And I thought, oh, I always wanted to do that. And I also wanted to play French horn. So I'll try those two things. Well, the writing came to fruition and French horn did not. And I think the neighborhood is happy. I think they're happy that I'm not leaning on my French horn. Anyway, in that writer group, everybody, there were older people, retired people, and I wasn't yet retired. And I just wing it. I don't like the word pantser. I like to be creative, and so I call my style wing it style, and I just let out fly. I mean, the reality is, honestly, I've been writing all my life. We skipped an important phase. Speech pathologists write clinical reports. Every 90 days in my private practice, I had to write a report to the referring doctor to keep the insurance company paying. It's a good, even if I wasn't required, I did it because it just keeps, if you review the case, where we've been, where we're going, where we need change, whatever. And I wrote in a different style. The speech pathology style is very form-driven, 8 pages long, lots of big, long terms that don't communicate. So I wrote one-page letters in my lively style, and I really built a very strong physician referral base. So I've written thousands of clinical reports, and as I said to people, some of them contained fabulous fiction because you have to, you know, make it sound like the child will die if they don't get therapy. So it just, you have to put a little drama. So I
think creative
writing
a
lot with that. Well, yeah, a little nuanced. We'll say nuanced.
I love
a very good
that.
Vocabulary. How to make it sound dire.
Well, you know, it's
the families it was.
Yeah, it was very important for the family. So, you know, you're kind of like their, you know, advocate pleading the case to, you know, to the judge almost, you know, to keep that funding going so you can continue to do the treatment.
Is,
I love
that. Yeah, yeah. So what I was going to say, the next phase of that is, in this creative writing group I was involved in easily, I just wrote floaty little pieces. They could have been song lyrics. I mean, there were so just things that came out. And everybody else was writing a memoir, their memoir. And I thought, well, okay, that's what we should do. But, you know, I had a white bread life. I grew up in little towns, small town America. There's no drama. There are drama things. But so what other families have drama things? It just wasn't inspiring. So I started writing other pieces on prompts. There are lots of prompts, and I won a contest and got into a writer group in the neighborhood. But here I am, still working, and they're all working on novels, and they expected me to read their, like, 20,000 word count. Oh, my gosh, too much. But I just moved through writer group and got to the right one. And then I'm in a short story group, and all of a sudden I'm writing a novel. So the mismatch. You know, the lumps and bumps, you still make it. It all forms you. It's all good. All that you spew out to write, it comes out good in the end.
So from a creative writing standpoint versus your technical writing standpoint as a pathologist, do you have any crossover? I know your creative writing played impacted what you wrote professionally in your speech pathology, but did you have any of your technical writing kind of crossover to your books like Hashes and Bashes? Because I'm reading that and I don't see a Hashes and Dashes. I have no technical writing that's coming through where I'm like, oh my God, I'm being bored out of my mind. I have none of that.
But I spurned the technical writing side. I developed a more personal style. That personal style of making I worked mostly with two-year-olds. And you make that little person a well-drawn character, if you will, someone alive, someone who must have this therapy or it'll just be the world will fall apart. So it wasn't that hard of a bridge, I don't think, for me, because I just developed that more personable, relatable style because that would move people's hearts. What I think I carried forward from my life is I do like to talk, but I also am a very good listener, and I have a whole slew of friends that I am the listener. We have house guests inside and upside and all around, and my husband and I are both listeners. And out of that, you store all that in my tape recorder memory and great characters. I mean, I've met some great characters, and I just tweaked them a little more. There are people I know in that book.
Yeah.
People who recognize themselves in that book.
And you're like, that was me. That's me. She called me something else, but that was me. I can't believe she wrote that. So when you, this is your second book, correct?
Yeah. Yes.
Your first book. When did you sit down and say, I'm going to write the next great American novel? So where did that origin begin?
No, it came in the back way, if you will. That was never my goal. This is kind of an astonishment to me. It wasn't my plan. It wasn't my focus. I was in the short story group where I thought I belonged, and one of the women who remains my good friend and a beta reader for me said, "This is a book," and I was so stunned. I mean, she said it just that way. PJ, this is a book. And so I had to evolve into a storyteller. I'm the person who has great story beginnings but can't follow through because the card of people at the stoplight drives away. So I've had to, it's a process of learning, but I'm a process person anyway. I'm not about the product. I'm about the process, the journey, the blast that I get to have. The end goal is to engage the imagination, to use the vocabulary that I have, that if you said the words I said once when a neighbor was irascible, which is the perfect word, and people looked at me like, huh? You know? So I get to use my words, I get to do my puns, my wordplay, I get to invent improbable characters and scenes and hang it all together. It's a wonderful way to spend time. I think.
I think one of the because we're going to talk about your book at length at the second half of the show today, because I'm just trying to get to know you. We've been chit-chatty. We've known each other through Southern California Writers Association and the great people there, but we've never really sat down to visit. So I'm just eating all of this up here, PJ. So,
okay.
How did you get connected to SCWA?
When somebody said I had to, this is a book, you need to write a book. Sought out there. We're just immersed. We have this great ocean here, the physical ocean, and this ocean of writing opportunities. And I went online and sought them all out and started attending. And I write articles for a blog, a writer's blog, telling the world about what I call my MFA by infusion. I just went to every writing opportunity that I could find that wasn't too far, because I'm not driving on the freeways very, very far, and just
right.
learned by osmosis, watched and listened and learned. And Southern California Writers is a very meaty group. There are great
yeah.
speakers. It's also very movie-oriented, which is good for me. I needed to make my writing more visual and more story-based rather than just letting words fly out and not know where they were going. So
mm-hmm.
it has been a good thing to, like, spin me in the right direction. It's very solid. It's just all of these opportunities we have are remarkable. We're lucky.
We're very lucky. And so just a real quick plug for SCWA. If you're a writer, a budding writer, a best-selling author, or anywhere in between, SCWA meets at Claim Jumper the third Saturday every month at 10 a.m. from about 10 to 1. You get a nice little lunch. It's nice, a nice big lunch. It's always delicious. You get a great guest speaker, and then networking with published authors, people who would like to be published, and people who just like to go and hang out with people who like to write. So there's everything in the mix for you. And if you'd like to find out more, go to the SCWA Facebook fan page, or you can send me a note or send PJ a note, and we'll get you connected up.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love writers groups because you're always meeting people with interesting stories to tell. But I will tell you, from all of the different networking opportunities that I've had the pleasure of attending, SCWA, at least for me, and then Lit Up on Tuesday nights too, because it's a different program. It's like watching one show versus another, but they're still top rated. But SCWA for me, I just really clicked with the people and the vibe of the group and all of the way that they support one another. So that's my little shameless plug for SCWA. Thank you for being a great group and having PJ there so I could get to meet her. So
I'll add to that, not to the time span. People say, oh, I'm too busy. 10 to 1. The speaker speaks at length. You're getting like a college level lecture there,
mm-hmm.
but a very personal, joyful, some laughs. It's entertaining, but it's also, I come away with pages of notes. It's a great learning experience.
Yeah.
It's really
packed. From beginning to end, you see every single person there taking pages of copious notes just to make sure that they're getting all the information. And the nice thing is afterwards, the presenters often will be able to share the presentations with you. So if you wanted to see it again or
yes.
take different notes, you certainly have that available to you. But that's a great point. It really is a college education type of a presentation that's fun. You're not going to be falling asleep anytime soon
exactly.
while you're attending that. So
yeah,
people
know how to bring it. So
yeah, they do.
And no.
You know, we're at the halfway point of the show already.
I know.
Can you believe that? This is crazy. We are going to take a quick commercial break. We're going to hear from our friends at It Matters Radio. We've also got a promo from NewHampshireFun.com and then our folks at Rainbow Brew. So we'll be right back in a couple of minutes. If you need to run to the bathroom, just turn up the speakers really loud so you can hear the promos, and we'll be back in a minute with PJ Colando.
Welcome to our discussion of It Matters Radio. Our guest today is Angus McWilliams.
Hey, laddie, let's get on with this thing. I'm on my way to a birthday party for Nessie.
You're throwing a birthday party for the Loch Ness Monster?
Well, first of all, it's not a monster. And second of all, I'm talking about niece Nessie. She's a wee bit of a lovely lass.
I see. Well, okay. Angus, can you give us your thoughts on It Matters Radio?
Hey, wonderful people. They had me on a while back to talk about my book.
Your what?
My book. I wrote a book about the Adventures in Scotland.
Oh, I see. A book.
That's what I just said. What are you, a deaf man?
It Matters Radio focuses on discovering new talent and bringing important indie artists on the air. Monica, Kenneth, and Carrie offer up meaningful conversation on new music, books, and fun topics. It's unlike any other radio program known to man and woman alike.
You can say that again.
Known to man and woman alike.
Just because I said you can say it again doesn't mean you have to say it again.
I'm just doing my best to show everyone that It Matters Radio basically brings variety, fun, and entertainment with a sincere desire to discover new topics and talent.
Why didn't you just say that?
I just did.
Hey, Letty, remind me when I can listen.
It Matters Radio is on every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific.
You Americans with your different time zones. We only have one time zone in Scotland.
And that would be...
That would be the time to down a pint or two of ale.
It Matters Radio, for the best in conversation, music, books, and entertainment. Join us Thursday evenings at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific. Discover the depth, diversity, meaningfulness, caring, guest-focused, friendly, enjoyable atmosphere of It Matters Radio with Ken, Monica, and Carrie.
That's a mouthful of alcohol, one.
Yes, and I'm going to go brush my teeth now. It Matters Radio.
The Granite State is home to three powerful kingdoms, each believing the throne of family fun to be their destiny. Ruled by dragons, each kingdom...
No dragons.
You're sure?
Yeah. Positive.
This summer, three exciting adventurous destinations are vying for the family fun crown. Whale's Tale, Alpine Adventures, and the new Candia Springs Adventure Park. Spend the day at Whale's Tale, New England's favorite water park, surrounded by the spectacular White Mountains, or over 300 acres of thrills at Alpine Adventures, New England's largest and most award-winning zip line and off-road adventure destination. But if you want to experience zip lines, water park fun, and an epic new aerial challenge all in one location, check out the brand new Candia Springs Adventure Park. 10 minutes from Manchester and a totally unique family adventure. Visit nh-fun.com. That's nh-fun.com.
Summer is upon us. Fun is coming.
Seriously?
To experience it all, visit nh-fun.com.
When it comes to coffee, freshness is queen. That's why Rainbow Brew believes you should have the freshest coffee, roasted to order in small batches and delivered to your door within a couple days. Whether you're purchasing for a coffee shop, restaurant, or home, Rainbow Brew is your one-stop shop for fair trade and organic coffee. Offering many unique blends, including AM950's own Blue State blend. That's Rainbow Brew, the queen bean, a proud sponsor of the Morning Grind. Online at rainbowbrew.com. Brew something good today.
I always love a fresh cup of Rainbow Brew. If you like tea, that's really cool, too. You'll see, for the shameless plugs of the day, Rainbow Brew, you can see their coffee ad on here. But if you like tea, I've got a whole line of tea that I would love to talk to you about. So if you want information on that, of course, let me know. But I'm not pushing that. We're pushing PJ Kalando's book, Stashes, which is available on Amazon.com. There's a link on the show page that if you click it, says just click here. You click that and it's going to take you to the Amazon page. I'm a big fan of supporting the guests who are on our show, who are all independent folks. We're not, you know, wealthy like Donald Trump and you know, that. So we don't have the Brinks truck backing up to the house every day. So buy 10 copies of PJ's book, Stashes. You're going to keep one for yourself, and you're going to go, why do I need 10? You don't. You're going to gift the other 9 away because people have birthdays and anniversaries and life events to celebrate this year, and that would be a perfect gift. The book we're talking about today, or we're going to start talking about now, is called Hashes and Bashes. It's her latest book. I don't even think it's available yet, PJ, and I've been diving into it yesterday and this morning, and I love it. So tell us all about Hashes and
Thank
Bashes.
You. Well, I'll start back with Stashes, if I may, because
yes.
This is the second book in a series. And I'll return to the fact that who knew I'd ever write a book? It was not a life goal. This is my encore career. It's a way I pass the time. I adore this one, too. I'm having a blast. So the love line of Stashes was baby boomer parents gallivanting around the country in a Winnebago, leaving the family farm in the care of their immature son and his conniving wife. What could go wrong? And I began with a rant. My husband and I don't have kids, but I listened to my friends who... in a remarkable series of events, their kids were all moving back home because we had that little downturn in the economy. So their adult kids in the 30s were losing their jobs, losing their cars, losing their homes, and moving back in with the parents. And so the book began with a rant and whatever happened to earn. No, these are all entitled people. Whatever happened to earning your way through life? And so that's a theme for me to approach that. And then a young person said to me, yeah, but all those great jobs, because I was already setting the story in Michigan, where the auto industry jobs had famously high salaries for a middle-income person, those jobs are gone. Our generation isn't going to have them. So I began to to try to feel some sort of empathy for that entitled generation. And so the series of Jackie and Steve Breeden, who live on a small farm, and their son Brandon loses his job and his cars and his home and have to move back home. And Jackie and Steve think, well, we've always wanted to go in a Winnebago road trip around the country. Now's our chance. We'll leave the farm to Brandon. He can do it. It's a micro dairy, by the way. And he and his wife can move in, take care of the farm, and we'll just go on the road. So they tried to be capricious, too, and just do whatever they damn well please. And consequences always prevail. It was a fun thing to write because I used to think that people were crazy when they said a character took over. And that's what happened. Amy, the bad girl daughter-in-law, the conniving daughter-in-law, turned the book hard left in chapter 4 because she decided that she didn't want to be poor. She didn't really want to live on a farm. She needed to buy expensive things, and so they just grow medical marijuana on the premises, bake them into cookies, package them with the home-delivered milk, and call their business Milkweed. So,
of course, right?
Of course. Medical marijuana was legal at that time in Michigan, and so I could write about it. And, of course, you can't do that. That has consequences. But this is a book about people not thinking about the consequences. The other thing that Amy is she's the vice president of the small town bank. She was Brandon the football star's tutor during college because he just was the football team star and he had to make grades. So that's how she got him, and she's stuck in the small town. She thought she wanted this small town life, but it's boring. And so she still needs her stuff, and she secretly increases the amount of the home equity line of credit that financed that Winnebago. And so all of a sudden, by the time that Jackie and Steve get to Vegas, there's no money in their bank account. And I just won't tell you anymore. But it's just all kinds of improbable things happen in a kind of protected, I Love Lucy way. But it all comes around. Except.
And that's Stashes.
And now. One of the things that was supposed to happen was a long-lost brother that Steve didn't know he had in California contacted him and said, come visit me. But it just doesn't happen because of things that fall apart on a road trip. And Hashes and Bashes opens with that brother from California coming to Michigan. He just arrives on the farm. He's an outsider. He's different. You know, he's divorced. All the women in town go crazy trying to fall over, you know, blink their eyes. And he just upsets the apple cart in unexpected ways, which is kind of how my husband and I feel when we go visit our Midwest family and friends. Just, you know, we've lived out here since 1979, and we didn't mean to be different, but we are.
Yeah.
It's just kind of fun to explore.
Well, I think one of the things that I enjoyed, number one, I love the characters named Steve and Jackie, and you don't know this, but those are I have two cousins named Steve and Jackie, and so when I was picking up the book and reading about Steve and Jackie, I automatically had a connection, even though, you know, they're brother and sister, so, you know, obviously they wouldn't be married, but your characters' names in the book really resonated with me, so I love your choice of character names in
Thank
the book.
Thank you.
But what I thought was interesting here is that, you know, we have these, you know, Midwestern values where we talk about, you know, the things that are always, you know, super important to us are going to be sports, religion, the weather, food, and not necessarily in any particular order, depending
Yes.
upon the day of the week. But you have these people who are, you know, so Midwest in all of the wonderful Midwest types of ways that, you know, you read about and hear about. And then you have Carl from California, and you think, oh, he is so much different than us, and he is an outsider, and what is he doing here? And then as the story unveils, I found a lot of similarities between this outsider from California and Steve and Jackie. Was that,
yes.
Am I off base on that, PJ?
No. Because one of the first things he does, he has a lot of money from sell of a California home. So he has money and he buys a farm down the road because he had a farm in California. That's the thing that's supposed to be, I think, gotten from reading Hashes and Bashes. There's a bias that we're all whacked out on drugs and, you know, LA is la la land and we're different, but we're not, Hollywood. He had a farm. He had a dairy farm. And so he buys one down the road from Jackie and Steve because he wants roots. He wants family. He wants connection. So he needs to, he just calmly goes about, well, wait, he doesn't calmly go. He buys a farm and he buys a tired stud bull. And the name of his business is Sire for Hire. You know?
Oh,
yeah, but things don't go so well, and then he. One thing that I'll back up. I learned from a very famous writer that what you write about is not the important thing. What you write about is emotion. So Google is your friend, and you can just find out anything. I wanted to know more about fracking, and I found out that the entire middle band of Michigan has the state land has been leased to outside interests, if you will, mostly Canadian, to the mineral rights to go after natural gas and oil. And that's what Carl does. He leases the mineral rights, and he's instantly rich, which adds another layer of conundrum. There's just the conniver in this story is the pastor. Who would like a new church steeple? You know, it's just the way they are.
Well, and we kind of hear a little bit about that at the beginning of the book when they, you know, talk about getting new stained glass windows in the church to compete with the Catholic church across the street. And you're like, okay, that was an interesting, you know, choice for, you know, the church to take. But, you know, there you go.
Small town pride. And the church is kind of the center. Actually, what happened in Stashes was part of the Stashes was a very wealthy widow's ashes. He had one of them spread out near his Colorado ranch roots, and she confessed that she hadn't done it. And when Jackie and Steve do that on their Winnebago trip, in exchange, she'll put stained glass windows in the church. So the windows are in, but now the widow is just demanding, and she says they have to be cleaned. So the church ladies have to raise all the money like church ladies do. The fundraising is has a nice side plot. I did something fun at a book event for Stashes. I auctioned off a character. People could buy the right to be a character in the book. And a young woman won that right to be a character in the book, and she immediately came home and whispered in my ear. She was so eager to tell me this fabulous courting story that she had with her husband, how she got the guy, that had to be in the book. It was just delicious. It was just delicious. And so that's a running subplot of who the mystery baker is in a place where people do bake with marijuana.
Yeah. I love the little twists and turns that we find. You know, and I think that makes for interesting reading because, you know, you could have written a book about here's life on the farm with Steve and Jackie, and they go out and milk the cows, and then they come home and, you know, they eat a casserole, and, you know, that would be their life. But you bring these characters depth and complexity. And, you know, Steve, for example, he's always so concerned about what, you know, Pastor Paul is going to say and what, you know, if he's going to get into heaven, if this happens, is he still going to be able to be a deacon in the church? And you have all of these things that they really wrestle with, and you feel, you know, you feel it in your gut going, wow, you know, I can't imagine what, you know, how Steve is feeling, or, you know, Jackie, who works at the high school, you know, and she has to confide in, you know, and she, you know, they have all of these things that, you know, again, very small town, but very California at the same time, for all of these things that sound so, this never happens because we're in a small town. Well, here's Jackie with medical marijuana cookies in the freezer. And, you know, it's like, okay, well, you know, I'm here in Southern California. I'm not sure. It probably wouldn't take too much time here, PJ, but I don't know anybody who has, you know, medical marijuana cookies in the freezer. You know, so, I mean, to me, you know, there's so much California
in Steve and
Jackie.
I'll just take the fifth.
I'm not going to ask. This
actually,
is a don't ask, don't tell show. But,
I have to tell you how the plot origin became around in Stash's, because I still had my speech pathology private practice, and there were dispensaries in Lake Forest. There was one in my office building. Talked to those dispensary guys. And there was one in Costa Mesa. I got to go to those, talk to those dispensary guys. And there's also a very active group in Laguna Woods. So I have some buddies who are in the biz and the distribution, the growing distribution biz, and they do not recommend edible. They do not.
Can I tell you a real quick story? This is all about you, but last year, a friend of mine, because I was like really totally stressed out, and, you know, and everybody's like, holy cow, you need to like take a pill, or, you know, take a chill pill. And I'm like, well, I can only do 85 hours of cardio a day and meditate and, you know, do all of it. And I had somebody give me, and we're talking, if it was a size of a dime, that would be too big. But they, you know, they said, well, here's a little edible. And I've never had an edible in my life. You know, I'm so, they call it straight edge. You know, I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't do anything. And I have this tiny little bite. And I thought, oh, this is just the dumbest thing ever. It wrecked me for like 3 days. So I just can't do any of that. But I thought that was just really wild. Crazy, crazy.
Yeah, see,
but,
so I don't edit. So anyway, all of that, there's a lot of drama that you can wrap around that. Because I didn't want to kill anyone. I didn't want to have a thriller and race around trying to find a spy and, you know, defuse the bomb. And I didn't want to write those things. I wanted to, the characters are what are important to me. So the reality is then I liked my characters in my book more.
Yeah.
At their behavior than some of the clients in my practice. And with my book and with my writing, if I didn't like their behavior, I could hit delete, you know? And so that it became more compelling, more satisfying, if you will. And I have the say-so of what happens. If I don't like their behavior, we change it. It's such a fertile opportunity to create things. And it's also, I hope, it widens the world. It bridges cultures. The Midwest is, you know, Indiana, where I'm from, is what everybody calls it, a flyover state. You know, why would you go there? You fly over on your way to somewhere else that's cool. But these people have really cool, nuanced lives. It's not really simpler there. It's kind of the same. People are people.
And that's, I think, what I am getting out of reading Hashes and Bashes, is that you really aren't any different from somebody who's in Michigan or California or Florida or Texas or wherever the case is. You know, people are people, and we all go through very similar circumstances. We might just have a different, you know, change of seasons compared to our friends somewhere else. But yeah, I love that. So
and
what are you working on?
Choices, you can laugh or not. You can laugh or not. Mine is the laugh. So
I like
I'm working
laughing.
On cash. I know. So I'm working on cashing in. I'm working on hitting the button to publish Hashes and Bashes, which is a little bit more involved for somebody who wasn't born with a computer in their hand. Mm-hmm. You know, like the phone has everything. So it's a little bit more involved. Also delayed by house guests we can get. But the book that I'm working on now is called Cashing In. It actually started as an idea in January. Do you remember that huge lottery?
Yes.
It was Mega Millions, and it was going to be split, and who was going to get it? Well, there was also a Mega Millions lottery recently that was sold in Speedway gas station in Indiana, so it just kept me right on track. And the story even began when I was in Australia. My husband and I were visiting good friends there, and we had a long car road trip, and we started writing the book then. So it opens with one of the protagonists winning that $5,500 million lottery, and what happens then?
I'm
going to go to Australia and explore their roots.
Well, speaking of traveling, you and your husband take all kinds of adventures together. Where has been one of your favorite places that you've been able to go?
You know, I really don't know. I don't relate well to the word favorite. I think because my parents were so into equal. I don't know if you notice, but when I give hugs to people, it's always both sides, equal time. You're not favoring left or right. So I have to say that I have loved every trip I've ever been on because I chose it. It was a place that we wanted to go. With that caveat, I've loved everywhere. I will have to say that Africa was transformative, and so was Australia, New Zealand. After because the air is different. Just like when you go to Hawaii, the air at the airport is different. It feels different. Mm-hmm. But Africa was bright and shiny, and the animals are a few feet away from your safari vehicle, and it's just like, oh, my God. Oh, my God, I'm a God. There's a herd of elephants. Oh, wait, there's a whole nother herd of elephants. Oh, wait, there's another one. It's just, it was astonishing, moment by moment, the most astonishing trip. There was, like, no downtime. And I think I felt that way in Australia and New Zealand. The people are very genuine, very much like Midwestern people, very much like here without the neon. Without the rapid growth and spectacular scenery. I mean, with not a speck of pollution. Oh, the Scandinavia was like that too. No pollution. So all of our photos look great. And they're iPhone photos. You know, it's just...
Wow.
It's a wonderful world.
So where are you going next?
Yep. Lassen National Park in Northern California.
When's that?
After Labor Day, we're going to go a few days, and I it's just a wonderful world. We lived in small towns, not the same one, my husband and I, but both of us knew we wanted to get out. we were going somewhere else, wherever it was. So this is a shared avocation for us. It's nice.
I love that. So we've got about 7 minutes left. So if I can bug you to talk about like the business of writing, because that's one of those things that, you know, it's always fun that, you know, you sit down and write your book, and then what happens when it's, you know, you got 75 cases of them sitting in your garage or however that works. What has been your experience as a published writer now on how you're marketing and selling your book?
Well, number one, anybody who sees me, meets me, knows the joy I have in writing my book. And I think that joy is palpable, and people want a piece. They want a piece of that joy. If she loves it, put me on whatever she's on, kind of a thing. I think selling comes more natural to me than you might expect. A speech pathologist, my husband was a salesman, and he helped me understand that I was in sales as well, because I was working with young children who were terribly disordered, and there was no hope. And I had to sell hope to the parents. Trust me, and we will fix this. We'll work together. We will get it done. I had to sell that to the child who, even at 2 years old, was having these wild-ass tantrums. They were little bullies and chips on their shoulders. I had to sell them. Trust me, and we'll get this done. So sales, I think, if you really value what you did, you have to value yourself enough to get it in other people's hands. It doesn't belong in your pocket. What you did, if you really believe in it, you should get it out there. And here's what I say. I am the Girl Scout who sold the most cookies. I just am. That's just,
yeah.
You know.
Just who you are.
I don't have a spectacular strategy. I don't have a roadmap. That's kind of averse to my personality. I like opportunities to come up. And I'm already thinking, since Hashes and Bashes features a Dalmatian on the cover, I'm thinking of contacting dog sellers, especially in Dalmatians, those kinds of people to cross market with. I think, you know, they'd love it. We'll see.
Well, I'm excited for everybody to get their hands on Hashes and Bashes. You can go to Amazon today and buy stashes. Please do that and help support PJ's writing efforts. And that will be really cool. If we were talking about SCWA, Southern California Writers Association, before, there's also a link on the show page to click that. That takes you to their Facebook page. It'll give you some, you know, insight on what the group is about and so much more. Tomorrow night, again, in Tustin, join Maddie Margarita as she presents Lit Up. It's a forum for authors. You're going to hear three authors read their material, take questions from the audience, and Maddie does a great job of interviewing the people as well. It's at Keen's Coffee in Tustin at 7 p.m. If you need more information, just send me a note, and I will get you hooked up because it's a fun place to be. PJ, as we get ready to wrap things up, what advice do you have for other budding authors that are out there?
I think, you know, I'll reference SCWA and what we've learned. Well, what was reinforced, because we hear it over and over again. I'll date myself, but there was a Van Halen song about go ahead and jump.
Yeah.
And that's what I do in my life. You go ahead and jump. And the parachute will open up. It's done it before. It'll do it again. You will not die. What was the worst that can happen? I mean, I'm just that kind of person. You know, our forebears all crossed a vast ocean in itty-bitty little wooden ships, and they got here. And those people live within us, and we honor them by continuing in that path. I mean, jump. Do it. Have fun. It's better than
Moan
politics.
Oh, my gosh. I just roll my eyes at that.
To bring
oh, my
it up.
Goodness. Where do you like your fans to stay in contact with you?
PJCalando.com.
It's the best place to be. Everybody, it's been my honor and pleasure to have PJ on the show with us today. Please go out and read her book, buy her book. Again, get the 10 copies, one for you, 9 to gift out to other folks. And Hashes and Bashes is on its way. She's got her finger on the print button. It's going to happen any second. And so you get to read the first one, and then you get to read the second. So you're just actually following along in the series. I love her writing style. It's very comforting. It's very familiar. And it's one of those things that once you get into it, you don't even realize that you're, you know, 75 pages into the book, because the time just flies that quickly with how smooth her writing style is. So if you want to do yourself a favor, go pick up Stashes today and enjoy that. For everybody else, if you like the show, make sure to follow the program. There's a little follow button right here on the upper left-hand corner. It says follow. You can input your email or your cell phone number, and you'll get a text update for every time we are live, because each show has its unique identifying recording number system, so you can go back and listen on demand. If you like Apple products, you can go register for the free download of Rated G Radio on Apple's podcasts. And you can take the most current 300 episodes with you, including this one with PJ. For everybody else, please have a great week. We will be back Wednesday morning with UK's psychic, Sue Davey. Phone lines open at 7:45 a.m. And you can ask one question about love, job, money, your kids, whatever it is that you want to ask her about, and she will answer it for you. PJ, it's been a pleasure having you here. I can't wait to see you again soon. And we will see everybody else Wednesday morning. Thank you.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.